Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 1, Text 41. Okay, I'll chant this myself because this one doesn't have a purport, and then we'll chant the next one together. Tasyod kalo gayo rajan vimalas chatraya suta dakshina patrajano bahuvor dharma vatsalaha. Translation, O King, Sujuna had three very pious sons named Utkala, Gaya, and Bimala, who became the kings of the Dakshina Pat. That means the southern part of the world. Okay, now 42, we'll chant together. Tata parinante kale Pratishtana Pati Prabhu Pururabhasa Utsrija Gamputraya Gatovanam Tatapari Nate Kale Pratishtana Pati Prabhu Pururabhasa Utsrija Gamputraya Gatovanam Tata Parinate Kale Pratishtana Pati Prabhu Pururavasa Utsrija Gamputraya Gatovanam. Pratishtana Pati Prabhu Puruvasya Utsuja Gamputraya Gatovanam. Ta-da! thereafter. Padinate. Sorry. Padinate kale. When the time was ripe. Pratishtanapati. The master of the kingdom. Prabhu. Very powerful. Pururavase. Unto Pururava. Utsrija. Delivering. Gam. The world. Putraya. Unto his son. Gataha. Departed. Vanam. To the forest. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, when the time was ripe, when Sudyumna, the king of the world, was sufficiently old, he delivered the entire kingdom to his son, Pururava, and entered the forest. Purport. According to the Vedic system, one within the institution of Varna and Ashrama must leave his family life after he reaches 50 years of age. Panchasad Urdvam Vanam Brajet. Thus, Sudyumna followed the prescribed regulations of Varnashram by leaving the kingdom and going to the forest to complete his spiritual life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the ninth canto, first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled King Sudyumna Becomes a Woman. Om Aginata Manam Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Loitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So, this is a very short purport, and Prabhupada really makes only one point, and briefly at that. So I did a little research in the Veda base to see what else Prabhupada, what other statements are there on this particular subject, so we could understand a bit more about why one should do this and how important it is. It does mention here in the purport that one who is within the institution of Varnashrama must leave his family life after he reaches 50 years of age. One could argue that, we're members of ISKCON, we're not exactly within Varnashrama. And that's correct. We're really not exactly within Varnashrama. But at the same time, Prabhupada has mentioned this on different occasions. He's, referred to this instruction, and it's obvious from his statements that, he seemed to feel that it was something that also applied to us. It was applicable. And exactly to what degree, then that's what we have to work out. And that's what one of the things we'll be talking about in the class this morning. So without further ado, I'll just read a couple statements that from other places. This is actually, I didn't bother to make the reference here, but I think this first one is from the Bhagavatam purport, where Prabhupada talks about this particular point of retiring at the age of 50. So Prabhupada says, along the lines of why it's necessary. So Prabhupada says, when one is bound by affection for one's wife, one is attached to sexual desires that are very difficult to overcome. Therefore, according to Vedic civilization, one must voluntarily leave his so-called home and go to the forest. So you notice here Prabhupada says not Varnashram, but Vedic civilization, a bit broader. Okay, go to the forest. Panchasordvam vanam vrajet. Human life is meant for such tapasya or austerity. By the austerity of voluntarily stopping sex life at home and going to the forest to engage in spiritual activities in the association of devotees, one achieves the actual purpose of human life. So, first thing that might come to somebody's mind is, this is not relevant for us, because here Prabhupada's talking about going to the forest, and, we can't go to the forest in this day and age. It's not practical. It's not possible. But so Prabhupada addresses that point in another purport, where he says, if one is at all interested in being freed from the bondage of repeated birth and death, old age and disease, after a certain age one must go to the forest. Panchasordvam vanam brajet. After 50 years of age, one should voluntarily give up family life and go to the forest. Okay, now here it comes. He says, the best forest is Vrindavan, okay, where one need not live with animals, but can associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never leaves Vrindavan. Cultivating Krishna consciousness in Vrindavan is the best means of being liberated from material bondage, for in Vrindavan, one can automatically meditate upon Krishna, meditate upon Krishna. Vrindavan has many temples, and in one or more of these temples, one may see the form of the Supreme Lord as Radha Krishna or Krishna Balaram and meditate upon this form. So, it's practical. You know, after 50, you go to the forest being Vrindavan. You take shelter at a temple, and you engage in devotional service. Right? So that's practical. So how does everybody feel about this so far? Are we all kind of comfy? I mean, because like Suvas Prabhu and Naikatma, you're both over 50. You're still in the Sachinoy. You're still in the Grihastha Ashram. And the, you know, that expression is when you point a finger, there's three point towards you. Me too. I'm sitting here speaking about this. I'm well over 50 and I'm still in the Grihastha Ashram. So, yeah, how are we doing? Okay? You comfortable to go on here? Can we continue? Okay, we'll say a few more. So actually, I'm going to ratchet it up now, because I'm going to read a couple more statements by Prabhupada on the same subject, where he actually, the emphasis becomes even stronger. Okay? And here it goes. Or here we go. And maybe literally, here I go for saying this, but anyway. You have to be bold sometimes. Okay, so Prabhupada says, this is from a lecture. He says, so everyone should retire at a certain age. Pancha sordvam banam brijet. As soon as one is 50 years old, he must retire. He must retire. It doesn't matter whether you have finished your duty or not. It doesn't matter. You must retire. Not that he will say, I have got this duty, that duty, that duty. No. Within this age, whatever duty you can perform, that's all right, then retire. That is the Vedic civilization. So Yudhisthira Maharaj concluded to retire from the service. So everyone has to take sannyas. It is not that a particular man, simply Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has to take sannyas. No, that is obligation. You must. So how are we doing now? Anyway, it's there. And I'm really not going to be honest, I'm not going to address this, get into a discussion on this particular point, but I'm going to try to make it even broader and discuss this phenomenon of how do we respond to instructions from the spiritual master. I mean, this is one specific instruction where we're getting, it's pretty clear, Prabhupada's making a pretty strong emphasis here that, hey guys, this is something that should happen. You should do this, you know, and there's so many other instructions of this, you know, like this. So how do we respond to the these kind of instructions to the spiritual master? Because you know, Sirupu has his hand up.
At 50, one should retire.
Yep.
That means from materialistic life, not from devotional life. The devotees that are here, they have their devotional life. Their spouses have their devotional life. They should retire from materialistic life if they're working as accountants in the material world or doing some medical profession. But as far as spiritual life, they're already in the forest. They started the forest, like yourself, in the early 1970s.
Right.
You entered the forest of Krishna consciousness. So that they're engaging in devotional service, that all these devotees are engaging in devotional service, they've already retired from life, from material life, when they were 21.
Yeah, that's a beautiful clarification. Thank you. And actually, it's true. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is examples of close associates of Lord Chaitanya. And we don't hear anything about them formally taking sannyas, like Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya. He was, you know, an intimate, confidential associate of Lord Chaitanya, Advaitacharya. There are others, you know, and they didn't, there's no mention of them formally taking sannyas, but of course the essence was there. The essence is that they were engaged in devotional service. And as Prabhupada pointed out here, the whole purpose of leaving that materialistic, sort of pointed out, materialistic family life is so that one can focus on spiritual activities. So that's the real idea. And so, yeah, that's the essence of this. But in general, as I said, I want to talk about how do we respond to instructions from the spiritual master? There's different responses. And according to how we respond to the instructions of the spiritual master, that will determine our own success or failure or advancement or lack of it in spiritual life, and even the way the movement progresses. So, like, the first response is something like this. Somebody could hear an instruction like this, and, you know, as a member of ISKCON, they could think, okay, well, I have to do it. You know, and back in the early days, that was a very sort of a kind of a common response. You know, you heard spiritual master wants us to distribute books, so you just thought, okay, well, I'll do it. You know, you didn't try to modify the instruction, but rather you just modified your consciousness and your own activities to accommodate the instruction, not the other way around. That's first class. That's a very good way to respond. Another way to respond to an instruction, say like this, or saying, you know, go out and distribute books or whatever, just, you know, some instruction, is, well, I can't exactly, might be hard for me to actually do that to the letter of the law, but, you know, just like they have this expression out in the material world, there's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, okay? So, actually following something according to the spirit of the law is actually more important than the letter of the law. So somebody could say, that's in relation to this instruction, as Surya did, he analyzed and he said, well, the essence of the whole thing is to be engaged in devotional service. It's not that you have to necessarily, physically, you know, give up that particular situation. The essence of it is to be engaged in devotional service. So if you're addressing the essence, then, yeah, Archita has his hands. Anyway, so that's another response that one could possibly get, that you do, I'm doing the spirit of the law, which is the essence of it is to be engaged in devotional service. I'm going to be engaged in devotional service. Again, you want to say something? Go ahead.
Well, before you even get to this point, Prabhu, if you're going to make statements like this on a particular subject now, then you have to look at all the things that Prabhupada said about that subject before you can dive in and say, how do we respond? Because as we know, on many topics, Prabhupada said many things in different places, different times. And on this particular subject, he made just the opposite statement many times, that if you were married as a devotee to a wife who's favorable to devotional activities, then there's no need of taking sannyas. He said that on several occasions.
Where are those statements? I couldn't find them a couple of days ago when I was researching
all
this.
We can find the reference for you, but yeah, he made statements like that. And he also said that one who's living at home with a willing wife and following strictly is better than a sannyasi. He said that on several occasions also. The sannyasis, they have to strictly avoid women. But a devotee who's living at home with a willing wife and following strictly is better than a sannyasi. So my point is, if when you're talking about sannyas and when to take and if you should take, you have to look at all the range of statements that Prabhupada made. Otherwise, you know, before you can start analyzing how to respond, you have to look at the broad spectrum of things that Prabhupada said on that particular subject.
Well, possibly more thorough research was necessary in preparation for this class. I didn't find those statements. That's good. I'm glad to know they do exist. That makes me feel a lot more comfortable. But anyway, on this point of how to respond, so anyway, that's, I mentioned two possible responses. One is you do it. The other is, you know, the spirit of it. Then there's another one, a third possible response, not just to this specific instruction, but to instructions by the spiritual master in general, that you hear it, you know it's correct. Well, it's the instruction of the spiritual master, but you're not prepared to surrender to it, so you feel bad. But that's good, actually. It's good to feel bad when you know that you're not willing to do something that you know you're not supposed to do. So Prabhupada once said on one occasion, lamentation is purification. So at least if you feel bad that I should be doing this, whatever it is, you know, leaving home after 50, distributing books when not distributing books when you feel like you're supposed to, or whatever, you know, there's different things. Not worshiping, you know. That's good. Lamentation is purification. So that's still kind of, you're still making some advancement with that one as well. The next possible response is rationalizing. Okay? And this is basically what that is that you hear an instruction from the spiritual master and you're not prepared to do it. And rather than, you know, even feel bad. You rationalize it. You kind of like analyze it. You twist and turn. And you kind of interpret it in such a way that, well, it's kind of, you don't really, doesn't apply to you, or you really don't have to follow it, or you change the meaning of the whole thing. That's not a good idea. That's not a good idea to do that. By doing that, you're going to cause, you know, problems in your own spiritual life and in society in general. And even worse than that, and this is like the next level of responses, is an instruction from the spiritual master, and you just ignore it. You just ignore it, as if, like water for duck's back, as if you didn't even hear it, it didn't even exist. And that's the worst. That's dangerous. That's dangerous for the individual, and it's dangerous for the whole society. What happens, you know, because basically what goes on when that happens, if you take that particular response, ignoring the instruction of the spiritual master, and you multiply that by many devotees doing that, what happens is you have it becomes socially acceptable to ignore the instruction of the spiritual master. And then you're in a situation where everybody is ignoring the instruction of the spiritual master, because it's kind of like, well, I'm ignoring the instruction of the spiritual master, and if you don't get on my case, I won't get on your case. And then, so everything's nice and comfy and cozy, you know, but everybody's ignoring the instruction of the spiritual master, so you're not making any advancement. And then what happens is, the next phase after that is it becomes politically correct. See, not only is it socially acceptable to ignore the instruction of the spiritual master, but it's actually evolves to the point where it becomes politically correct to ignore the instruction of the spiritual master. So much so that when somebody starts presenting, hey, wait a second, we're supposed to be doing this, that person is, you know, labeled as a heretic practically. You know, that person becomes criticized. Now you say, what is he talking about? No, I am talking about something specific. I had personal experience of this, you know, that this actually can occur and does occur. And I even experienced it many years ago. I was in Australia, and at one point they stopped book distribution. I was transferred to Australia in 1978. I was there from 78 to 89. So we distributed books for about a year or so. And then there was the book distributors were very like new devotees and new book distributors, and they weren't particularly accomplished, you know, which is understandable. They were just, as I said, new devotees and new distributors. So they were doing this thing where they'd give people the book, and then they'd say, you know, here, this is for you. And they'd say, oh, thank you very much. You got to give a donation. And the person, well, but you gave it to me. And so, you got to give a donation. And it was a tug of war. And then, you know, the people were inevitably unhappy with the whole thing. And this was going on day after day after day. Finally, people reported it to the press, you know, and to the TV stations. And the TV stations came out there, and they started filming the whole thing. You know, they started setting the devotees up. They'd have, like, a person from the television station walk down the street like he's just a person walking down the street, and the devotee would give him a book, and then, you know, just same thing would happen, the tug of war. And then, you know, and on one occasion, that happened, and it was a setup, and, you know, and then the guy from the TV station pulled off a devotee's wig, and the devotee freaked out, and he started chanting Nisringa prayers on the top of his lungs, and started trying to run away, but he ran into like a dead alley, and he just kind of melted down in the corner there chanting Nisringa prayers. So shortly after that, because that was one instance, and there was others, you know, the leaders there decided to stop book distribution. And it was. We actually stopped book distribution in Australia for like a few years. But, so I was there. I was just like a rank and file brahmachari, so I kind of went along with it. You had no choice except to escape to New Zealand, which a couple of devotees did, and they kept distributing over there. But then after a few years, you know, just after totally accepting it, I sold candles for a year and, you know, mass-produced bogus Hong Kong paintings for a couple of years. And I was on a plane ride. I was flying, I can't remember where, but I was reading this book by Satsrup Maharaj, distribute book, distribute book, distribute book. And in the back, there were all these quotes by Srila Prabhupada. And so I was reading through them. And one after the other, I was seeing, like, you know, these statements from Prabhupada with this strong emphasis on book distribution. And I just kind of like a super soul or whatever, I just got a strong feeling, wait a second, this is wrong. This is wrong. You can't stop distributing books. That's crazy. You know, look here. There's Prabhupada's statements one after the other. So I remember I went back. You know, when I went got back to Australia, I started going around and saying, hey, you know, showing different God brothers. Hey, look. Prabhupada said this. Prabhupada said that. You know, and I became a troublemaker. You know, so I got in trouble for presenting what we're supposed to be doing, which was distributing books. Eventually the whole thing got worked out and it's, they're distributing books again. But yeah, so it can happen. It can happen. So we have to be careful. And it happened to me. That's my personal experience with it. And historically, we can see that that's happened. A great example of that is Christianity. Christianity is an example of that, where it started off as Prabhupada said. He acknowledges Jesus Christ as, a pure devotee, and this statements, so many different statements glorifying Jesus Christ in Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada quoted his spiritual master as referring to him as a Shakyavesha avatar, like that, empowered personality to spread Krishna consciousness. But yet his followers have misrepresented him, right? To a very significant extent, and to the point where Prabhupada said it's very difficult to find a real Christian. And he made that statement on more than one occasion. Down here on Venice Beach, back in 1973, Prabhupada said, the Bible is written by the saint, this saint, that. What Jesus Christ said, that they do not do. Thou shalt not kill. But then he said, but if we say that, they'll kill us. So, as Prabhupada, he kind of confirmed or verified that this is the case. That they had a leader that was bona fide, Jesus Christ, acknowledged by both him and Bhakti and his spiritual master Bhakti Siddhanta as a Shakyavesha avatar, but a following which became over a period of time, not bona fide. You see, so that danger is there, And why? Because, it's at different increments. Incrementally, they didn't respond properly to the instruction of their spiritual master. Well, they had a big disadvantage because they might have, even after one generation, they probably didn't even know what it was because of, different things. But anyway, you can see it can happen. So we don't want this to happen, of course, within ISKCON. And ways to, because, it's the end of our spiritual life. It's the end of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So ways to guard against that is, of course, the obvious. Individually, we have to try to follow very strictly and sincerely. And another good point is, it's good to discuss stuff, and get a consensus and make sure we're all on the same page. That I think that's helpful. That should be going on at some level, maybe not necessarily at a local level, but certainly at some level within ISKCON, discussions should be going on. Like they have this kirtan thing now. Apparently they have discussions about what's the proper standard. This is good. It's good to have that because as we just heard yesterday, it's like I'm not... Isn't that alarmist what I'm saying? Because Prabhupada just said yesterday, we just heard it in his lecture. He said, people after they get Brahminical initiation, but if they don't follow, if they don't live according to the Brahminical standard, he says, then the whole thing becomes false. He said that yesterday in his lecture. So that danger is there, and of course, we don't want that to happen. And then somebody respond to that by saying, but wait a second, what about the prediction of Lord Chaitanya, where, Prativite Achadatta Nagadadi Gam Sarvachak Prachara Hoibe Moinam, that this, the holy name of Krishna will be heard, spread to every town and village. I mean, that's there. So how could the whole thing become false? How could the whole thing become ruined like that? Well, one possible response to that is, yeah, that will happen. It's a prediction from which it will happen. But we might have nothing to do with it. And just like Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, nimittamatram bhavisavi sachin, you fight and you become an instrument, you see? But and Prabhupada in a lecture, I heard him say, the point was if Arjuna wasn't willing to do it, Krishna would have got somebody else to do it. You see, Krishna was giving Arjuna an opportunity. He was giving him an opportunity. Okay, hey, look, here's a golden opportunity for you. Surrender. And do this service, and you'll become a glorious devotee, But if you're not willing to, well, somebody else will. Bhima will, or somebody else will, Somebody else will surrender and do it. So in the same way, we've been given a golden opportunity, now to be participate in the spreading of the Krishna conscious movement, and which means properly responding to the instructions of the spiritual master, and then we'll be used as instruments, to help this movement spread throughout here locally and throughout the United States. But, if we don't want to do that, then some Krishna will get somebody else to do it. He'll spread the movement in some other way. That's one possible response to that. So, very important that we kind of take this whole thing, you know, take the instructions very seriously and try to carry them out. Particularly one particular instruction I would like to, you know, focus on is preaching. And I just want to mention sometimes, you know, devotees, I know in the past there was a little response feeling among some devotees that, you know, when we say this prayer in the morning about my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please send us some new Sankirtan devotees so we can distribute more and more Srila Prabhupada's books in America. Our only desire is to increase the Sankirtan mission. Therefore, we need new Sankirtan devotees. Thank you for considering this prayer. I said the whole thing, so just in case you, those of you who don't say it and couldn't figure out what we're all mumbling in the morning, that's it. So now you can say it along with us. But it's, you know, when we're saying that, we're not saying that we're not saying that prayer. We're not trying to, it's not, the purpose behind that is not to make other devotees feel uncomfortable. You know, right? That's obviously not the motive. Let's make the non-Sankirtan devotees, whoever they are, everybody's a Sankirtan devotee ultimately, but let's make these devotees feel uncomfortable. No, that's not it. The reason why we're saying that prayer in the morning, it's very good reasons, because we've got millions of people out there to meet. You know, there's just like millions of people out there, and they just, it's kind of like this is fruit picking season, and the fruit is ripe. Like just yesterday, I was with Kush. We were at a Star Wars celebration at the Anaheim Convention Center, and you know, there were people coming in from every other person we talked to was from another part of the United States, and I met somebody from Venezuela, Scotland, England, Japan. They're from all over, you know, and. About, 50% of the people we have hit, you know, one out of every two or one out of every three people we stopped and spoke to was kind of like, oh, yeah, sounds interesting. I took a book. It was really good. So there's so many people out there. There's literally millions of ripe fruit out there. So, you know, we got to get to them. And so, you know, it's important that we take these kind of instructions seriously. Prabhupada said here in New Dwarka, I think 73, 74, right in this temple room, right here in this, sitting on that very Vyasan, he said, so print as many books and as many languages as possible and distribute, and this Krishna consciousness movement will automatically spread. That's what he said. You know, so I don't never heard anything after that that changed that, so that's still our, that's our program. To print as many books and as many languages and distribute. And according to Prabhupada, that's the formula. You know, it's the Krishna consciousness movement will automatically spread. Automatically. Means you just do that. And like somebody could say, well, we've been doing that. We've done that. What do you mean? We're doing that? We've done that? Yeah, it's spread. It's spread. We're spreading. You know, we're getting, still making new devotees, and our congregation is increasing. And the, you know, just the awareness of, among the general populace is the level of spiritual awareness is going up, so it is working. And ultimately, you know, how, to what extent, to what degree it'll work, that remains to be seen. But you know, there's that statement from Prabhupada. Now, if this would be conclude with this statement, Prabhupada, famous statement that Prabhupada made when in a letter to Sudama when he was in, you know, just anyway, referring to when he was in New York at the beginning, and I mentioned this the other day when Dravida gave class, Prabhupada said, when I was alone in your New York, I was thinking, who will listen to me in this horrible, sinful place? But let me stay a little longer, he thought. At least I could distribute a few of my books. But then he goes, but Krishna was all along preparing something that I could not see. He brought you young American boys and girls to me one by one, to be trained up for doing the work, the message, spreading the message of Lord Chaitanya. He says, now I can see it as a miracle. Otherwise, in your city of New York, one old man with just barely enough money for getting edibles, how could he survive? What to speak of spreading a God-conscious movement for the salvation of the entire human race? See? So in other words, there's always that Krishna preparing something we cannot see factor. We always have to remember that. And whatever's happening now, you know, on the surface, that's not everything. You know, Krishna's in the background. He's observing. He's observing us. He's observing how much we're trying, how sincerely, individually, each one of us is trying to surrender. And he's observing how much we're trying to cooperate. And he is, you know, waiting. His time is on his side. And who knows? I mean, something just like what happened to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was saying, he basically what he was saying in that letter didn't seem very hopeful. I mean, it didn't seem like it was going to happen. But then he said, but Krishna was all along preparing something I could not see. So how do we know that Krishna is not all along preparing something, even right now, as we sit here, that we can't see? You see? And what that is, we don't know. But it could be something really wonderful. So, you know, like Prabhupada did, rather he didn't go back. He decided to stay and keep, you know, surrendering. And then Krishna really did something wonderful. And that same, the same philosophy hasn't changed. So that same sort of thing could happen now, you know, or just sometime in the near future or sometime in the distant future. The same thing could happen. Okay, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments, Balaram?
On distributing books, that is a general instruction. I personally was distributing books, and my Gurudev instructed me to get a job. So I'm saying that not all, you know, from all the people that are listening here, some might, you know, be working as a iTech or a, you know, a doctor or something. And then they heard you, and then they'll just drop everything and they distribute books. That's all wonderful. But in all introspect, people, devotees should have a personal, one and foremost, get a guru. And for those who are Prabhupada's disciple, I cannot give you advice, but I can share with you what my Gurudev did when Prabhupada left the planet. He encircled himself with very advanced God brothers, and he would confide with them and ask them these particular important questions. And through these God brothers, Prabhupada would speak through these devotees. So you have to have your circle of very advanced devotees as to the Prabhupada's disciples. I have no position to, you know, to remark on that just by sharing my guru's example. And for those who have no gurus, they have to go and offer their obeisances to the advanced devotees within their temples and get their advices on that, because these devotees know them personally, their nature. Each individual is a person and unique. Somebody can be very good in cooking and not very good in distributing books. Then he should stay cooking. You know, whatever is his person. You cannot tell an accountant, you know, to clean pots and...
This is a comment, in other words.
This is just a comment. So, you know, because it's a very general description of the instruction of Prabhupada.
Okay, so let me respond to your comment. Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. So on the point of, that you know, there's people who are out there working IT and like that, and, you know, do we expect them to drop everything and, you know, become book distributors? No. An analogy, just like, you know, when the United States went to war with Japan, you know, World War II, okay, it wasn't expected that everybody just drop everything and go out there and become a soldier, you know, and join the Army or the Navy or the Marines or the Air Force, no. But it was expected that everybody who's a good, you know, a citizen, do something to support the war effort, you see? So that's what's expected. Not that we expect everybody to drop everything, change their whole life, turn everything upside down and, you know, go out and, you know, go start going door to door and distributing books, okay? But, you know, support the effort. And as far as the second point goes about, you know, getting the guru, we have that. That's already in place. You know, there's gurus available, and if you're in a position where you're just, you know, a new devotee like that, or you have a guru, you don't have a lot of personal associates, we have the GBC. You know, and the instruction of the GBC is coming down through the, you know, it's coming down. It's coming down to the temple, you know, the regional secretaries, the temple presidents, and like that. So really, that's kind of already in place, from what I could see. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Yeah, Bhaktavata.
The Thank you, Brigapati. It was an excellent class on book distribution. You mentioned at one point there are millions of people out there, and I know from personal experience that there's a lot of big venues, a lot of concerts going on where there's 20,000, 30,000 people, especially coming out at the end. And if there's only, like, you know, 5 or 10 book distributors, how can you reach everyone? But if you have one or two people chanting loudly the holy name, then all those 20 or 30,000 people who are coming out in a space about as wide as this are going to get purified by hearing holy name, even to the degree that they're getting so much benefit they don't have to suffer the reaction for all their past sinful activity. I heard that was read by Subhas himself in this temple room from Sri Namamrita. It stated that anyone who hears the holy name even one time, they get so purified they don't have to suffer the reaction for all their past sinful activity. And then the next verse was, it repeated hearing, then one loses the propensity, that means the tendency to commit sin, and develops pure love of God. So if we can have Harinam Sankirtan going on along with the book distribution, then not only the people that we contact with the books are getting benefit, but everyone is getting benefit by hearing the holy name. And also the holy name, when it's chanted, it acts like a filter. During Harinam, you can see, like, the book distributors can just look out and see, okay, who's interested in this Harinam Sankirtan. Then they don't have to waste time on everybody. They can see immediately which people are interested.
Yeah, that's good.
It highlights the interested people.
Okay. I think we've got the gist of it. It's good to have Harinam. There's nothing, you know, nobody's got anything against Harinam. But I just wanted to point out, because somebody brought this up to me just the other day, just basically what you were saying. My response was that, you know, when Prabhupada was here, we were doing the same thing. There was Harinams, but we were doing book distribution at the airports, at the transportation terminals, at the schools, at the events. And Prabhupada didn't say, you know, and he had a good amount of time to say it. He had about 5 years, because, you know, from 72 kind of it took off, and he was here with us till 77. At any point, he could have said, no, that's not what I have in mind. Don't do it like that. Go back on the streets, just chant everybody in dhotis and kirtas and just whatever books you distribute in that way, that's okay. Just do it like that. He didn't. He didn't say that. He was happy with it. He told Tripurari, go to the manager of this airport and tell him to rename it Oh Hare Krishna Airport. And as Prabhupada knew what was going on, and he obviously approved of it. You see? That's not to say that he didn't want Harinams, and it's not to say that the devotees who were book distributors were, you know, there was no faction at the time. I mean, the most enthusiastic advocates of Harinam were the book distributors. I mean, I could have this picture in my mind of, you know, being back at 340 West 55th Street, 8th Avenue, and and Pragosh, you know, being out there, he's the leader of the Harinam. He was our top book distributor, and he was the one who led the Harinam out. So both things can go on, and whenever possible, sure, there should be a Harinam, but I think it's misleading to try to give devotees the impression that the way it's happening now is something not the way it really is supposed to be happening. Because it was happening just like this when Prabhupada was with us, and he didn't say stop it, he didn't criticize it, quite the contrary, he was happy about it. So I think Swas wanted to say
I'm not trying to criticize anything.
I think the proper perspective, which is that, yeah, Harinam, it should be go on, and it should be encouraged, and everybody should participate in it, and probably more even than we're doing. But at the same time, I think it's incorrect to say that, you know, that the way the book distribution is going on today is not something that Prabhupada would have wanted or approved of, because it was going on that way then, and he did approve of it. But yeah, you're right. We should participate in Harinam more, especially because we have such nice senior devotees who have made such a great effort, sacrificed their own time and energy, and then going out there and they're heading it up. And we're very fortunate here in New Dwarka to have that. You know, it's supported by the management and senior devotees. But there's always room for improvement. We could always do it more. and it should be supported more.
I'm just saying, like at big events like that where there's a lot of people there, there could be Hari Nam and book distribution.
Yeah, but it's not always practical. Like, for instance, if we would have tried to do a Hari Nam where we were yesterday, we would have got kicked out. We're there undercover, a lot of these things. Some not, but and some of them you don't know till you get there, you see? So, it's a risk. It's a risk. Some places it's not possible, and some places it's going to be a risk. So that's why we go and do it the way we do it. I mean, I was aware of that. It was, I could have had Swas made an announcement. Hey, everybody, great chance to do a Hari Nam tomorrow. Yesterday at the Anaheim Convention Center. But, who knows? You get out there, you start chanting, and the security says, oh, no, forget this, We're out there undercover, you see. So it's better to, I'd say, just do a couple hundred books undercover, and, you got that under your belt, than to risk having a Hari Nam party go out there. Not only will you not be able to do the Hari Nam, but you'll not have the opportunity to distribute the books. So when possible, yeah, but a lot of times it's not possible. Swas Prabhu.
I think that we shouldn't forget what Srila Prabhupada said about book distribution. He called the Brihat Mridanga, the greater drum. So we should see that that's actually what Prabhupada personally said. And secondly, Prabhupada actually went so far as to change the appearance of devotees to go out on book distribution. In other words, Srila Prabhupada was asked about wearing, karmic clothes.
He sanctioned it.
He sanctioned it as being scriptural. And so he wanted book distribution so intensely that he even changed the appearance of devotees in order to be able to distribute these books.
And he documented it. There's at least two purports within one in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and one in the Bhagavatam where he says
right,
it's
and this
okay.
has nothing to do with competition with Hari Nam. I think this is really like going in a different direction. This is not what it's meant. This is not what it is. It's not a competition between the Hari Nam and book distribution. I think it's a little silly on our part to be seeing like that. We should see spiritually, transcendentally. Everything's important, but it's just that we're saying that Prabhupada even said that book distribution is in the mood of the gopis. These are all statements by Srila Prabhupada. Mood of the gopis, Brihat Mridanga, and even changed the appearance of devotees to go out and distribute his books. So, this is what Srila Prabhupada did and said. And it has nothing to do with competition with Hari Nam and don't have Hari Nam. And everybody should go out on Hari Nam. Everybody should go out on book distribution. That's ridiculous. So, this is not getting these kind of controversies that are really, not very good. And they don't come to any good end either. Let's just have Hari Nam. For God's sake, the temple spent $15,000 just for Hari Nam ban. It's not like the temple's not supporting Hari Nam. We try to make announcements for Hari Nam. So please, don't create some atmosphere here that's unreal. They should both be going on. We do a lot of things here to increase Hari Nam and chanting of the holy name.
If you promise to keep it to 30 seconds.
Lock it.
Okay. You're on the call.
I have the chance to distribute books around the world, and Prabhupada, Gurudev, Tamal Krishna Goswami made it a point. If you're gonna, the job is to distribute the books with expert and intelligent discernment. Now, local management have got that intelligence in hand. And we respect that. In other countries, in China, Okay. In Taiwan, in Orient, they have a different style of distribution because they are different culture.
Yeah.
And different style in India. That can be implemented, his suggestion, in India. You can go on Hari Nam, but we're in America. And we should respect, Swas is a veteran book distributor. I mean, this guy is...
That's the
30
buzzer.
Seconds, okay. Done.
Grantarod Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hari, Hari.
It's for
hard to get them to get bring the microphone to the ladies, but I do have a comment about the sannyas thing. We raise our hand and we get ignored, you know. But anyway, I just wanted to say that the sannyas thing.
Hey! I
don't know if there's this theoretical thing that you read in Selfless Works about becoming sannyas, but then when you look at the practical thing that's